Reading from the New York Times, what we should know about the shooting of Jacob Blake. We'll visit with his attorney here in just 60 seconds, but let me just kind of remind everybody about where we are on this story. Jacob Blake is that 29-year-old black man, I'm reading from the New York Times, left partly paralyzed after a white police officer shot him 7 times in the back outside an apartment complex in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That happened last August. The shooting, which happened in front of 3 of Mr. Blake's children, was captured by a neighbor in a video circulated widely and rapidly on social media. Outrage spread quickly. Protesters poured into Kenosha in the days after the shooting, as did counter-protesters. An Illinois teenager, that would be our Kyle Rittenhouse, was charged with intentional homicide in the shooting death of 2 demonstrators. Professional athletes in several leagues led by the Milwaukee Bucks of the NBA joined the protests by refusing to play games. 4 months after the shooting of Mr. Blake, the Kenosha County District Attorney Michael Gravely announced on January 5th that the officers involved in the shooting would not be charged. Mr. Blake is 29. He's a father of 6, grew up in Evanston, moved to Kenosha a few years ago, said the Tribune, to find work and raise his family. He was training to become a mechanic, they say, at the time. In Kenosha, on August 25th, 2 people fatally shot, a 3rd wounded, as protesters clashed with counter-protesters. Kyle Rittenhouse, then 17, whose white was arrested at his home in Illinois and charged with 6 criminal counts. On November 6th, prosecutors in Kenosha County Circuit Court dropped 1 count of 3rd-degree sexual assault and agreed to drop 1 count of criminal trespass if Mr. Blake pleaded guilty to 2 counts of disorderly conduct, according to court records and Mr. Blake's lawyer, Patrick Cafferty. Another one of his lawyers is on a phone line. Beivre Lamar is an attorney for Jacob Blake on the lawsuit filed. So let's pick the story up there. Beivre, you're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here.
That's the summary, as the Times just kind of caught us up on the 411 of that. Anything else you would add or stood out to you in that sort of description of where we are today?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely been a long road. I think the facts, as you put it, were pretty factual. We have come a long way to get to this point. There's been a lot of investigation that is done, as we know, by state agencies, in addition to Jacob Blake's legal team. I work alongside attorney Ben Crump and also attorney Patrick Selvey. And there's been a lot of work and that has been put in over the last several months here.
So where are we today then?
Today is about kind of accountability. I think as we look in last year, whether it be George Floyd, the Jacob Blake, it was a year of social awareness of these social justice issues. And I think that here in 2021, it's about accountability. We've seen the city of Minneapolis step up and, you know, kind of make an effort to make things right with the Floyd family. And now the Blake family, you know, Jacob Blake is now seeking justice himself. And we've done so yesterday with filing the lawsuit against the officer that was involved in his incident on August 23rd.
Is it just the officer or is there anybody else named in that suit?
Right now, it's Officer Shesky, who is the direct actor of shooting the 7 shots at Jacob Blake.
Are you encouraged? That is, do you like your chances given what happened to Minneapolis?
You know, we think that it's pretty evident. We think we're lucky to have the bystanders have a video that was available for us to actually see what actually did occur on August 23rd. The city of Kenosha police departments did not have body cams. So there's a lot of he said, she said that's at stake when we have these issues. But luckily, we did have that video footage available. And we think that from what we've seen with the outpouring of support across the country in response to this shooting, that we think it's pretty straightforward. I think that without question, Officer Shesky's actions were excessive. I mean, any human being who's walking away 7 times with their back facing you, I think is an egregious act. And I think that, you know, we do feel very confident moving forward.
think a lot of us are confused, right? I mean, if though it was determined that there was no criminal action, then how is it that you should win civilly, right? And I know there are different thresholds, but would it have helped your case if they had decided to prosecute criminally?
You know, I think, you know, as you pointed out, there are definitely two different thresholds. You know, obviously, in the criminal system, the analysis by the local district attorney, he's viewing it as far as determining criminal intent. And again, we might differ on our stance on that. Again, but that's his evaluation in that system. As we look at his actions on a civil basis, we're solely looking at whether his actions were excessive. And I believe that he definitely exerted excessive force by shooting a human being 7 times. I think that when you look at the video, there was no pause after the first shot to even see if the first shot would have stopped what the officer might claim to be an imminent threat. So when you look at that many shots within that short time frame, I think it's pretty evident that, you know, his actions were excessive.
So if you sue the police officer, though, he doesn't have millions and millions of dollars. That's why I wondered if maybe the department or the city, if you would go for a deeper pocket, right? Can you talk a little bit about the strategy on that?
Well, I can say that in many occasions, by him being an employee and acting in the course of his duty as a Kenosha police officer, that the city of Kenosha will likely indemnify him for any suits brought against him. So again, that is, you know, left to be determined, but we do believe that without question that Officer Shesky was the primary actor.
Yeah.
So at this time, that's who the action
is being brought against. And in a case like, Biavri, in a case like this, do you seek an amount or do you just wait for the jury to determine an amount?
You know, it is unspecified at this point. We can say that, you know, Jacob's Welch recovery is long. I mean, he has permanent injuries from the waist down. Obviously, medically, we all know how substantial medical costs can be, especially here in 2021. And I would like to mention that, you know, Jacob has around-the-clock care. He's getting 24-hour assistance. He's not able to exercise a lot of his bodily functions. So he's getting assistance in that capacity as well. So, you know, this is not, you know, does he need compensation, especially for medical bills and so forth? Absolutely. But the main premise of this is about accountability. And I think in order for our nation to heal and to grow and to continue to be united, mm-hmm. I think that's the first step. And that is, you know, the strong basis of this suit.
Well, I hate this, but is there a number then in mind? I mean, we could calculate what, say, he lives to 90, 51 years of medical assistance will cost. That's a staggering number. And then lost income, that's another number, et cetera, et cetera. But then, is there something else, like a message number that you're looking for? And if so, how do you come up with that? We're talking to Jacob Blake's lawyer, Biavri Lamar. Answer that for me in a minute. Biavri Lamar is Jacob Blake's attorney. This is the Kenosha, Wisconsin story. The man who was shot as he was going into the car 7 times. Is he turning on the police? He was shot in the back, but there's some questions about that we'll get to in just a minute. But so, Biavri, you were talking to us about the amount of money that you seek, and you said it's kind of wide open. Do you have a number in mind, though?
You know, I don't, unfortunately. You know, Jacob's condition is like I mentioned, day-to-day. There's a lot of complications that arise when you suffer such a serious injury. So there's a lot of medical projections, and again, we have to consider the fact that this did not happen to a 69-year-old man. This happened to a 29-year-old man. So again, this is a long road, and there will be experts that can opine as to, you know, what those numbers would be and what kind of care he's going to need and so forth. And we leave it to the reasonable jurors that will be selected if we get to that point to determine what is the appropriate amount to deter this type of behavior from law enforcement.
I made him 39 again, a minute ago.
It's
yeah, 29. And what was the amount in Minneapolis? Is that I'm trying to remember?
I believe that the settlement amount in Minneapolis with the Floyd family was around $27 million or so.
$27 million. Imagine that. So is that in the back of your mind? Is that sort of a starting point?
You know, I haven't determined what a starting point would be. I think that, you know, as I mentioned, Jacob's condition is very serious. I think that the officer's actions was quite egregious. So again, I leave that for a jury to determine. You know, this is not, we don't want to make this about money or compensation or anything like that. Nobody would wish to be shot seven times to have and take that type of risk on their life. So I think the most important thing is to concentrate just on accountability and as us as a country being able to unite. I think that officers in this country do a very, very important job. You know, we respect these officers who put their lives on the line every single day, just like any other organization or company, you know, whether it be Amazon, Google, whomever. But when there's bad actors that you have within these organizations, they need to be held accountable. And that's what this lawsuit is about. And again, that's the justice that Jacob Blake and my other co-counsel is seeking.
Was your client a bad actor? I mean, he would not be in this strait if he had simply followed the command by the police officer. And my understanding is that he wrestled with the police. He was more than uncooperative before that video began. How much responsibility does Jacob Blake own on what happened to him?
Well, we would differ with that narrative that has been painted. Again, that is one account of the events. However, we believe that there's several other differing point of views. We believe that the officers were, in fact, the aggressors from the very start. Our lawsuit points to those facts. Jacob was kicked, punched, tased. So he was assaulted prior to the video even starting. So again, this is not the proper forum to, you know, kind of weigh out those facts and the credibility of those assertions. We'll leave that for a jury to determine. But again, as it is necessary, you know, we do definitely have to refute those allegations.
Well, I understand that. And listen, look, when he is turning around the door and he's facing the vehicle, the police officer might have reasonably wondered, is he armed or is he going to turn on me or what's going to happen next? I think the amount of force, this is just me personally now, I think the amount of force that they executed upon him is crazy, right? At that point, with that many officers armed with firepower, there was no reason for them to shoot him that many times. So I'll give you that. But literally, he was walking around the car and not doing what they had asked him to do. And I think that's very frustrating for a lot of people who see cases like this. If the police are bad actors, or if one of them is a bad actor, if your only interest were in saving your own life, you would accommodate the cops. You would not walk away. You would not reach into a car where they might think you're getting a weapon. I mean, that's the maddening thing about this. I suspect the police were out of line, but the video doesn't lie. He was walking around and not doing what the cops were asking him to do.
So my response to that would be quite simple. What you've described as an individual who would be obstructing or resisting an arrest or obstructing from an officer's commands. And in the state of Wisconsin, that's a misdemeanor. Punishable by up to 9 months in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. You don't get shot seven times or shot at seven times for a misdemeanor. This was completely against what we believe to be in accordance with the police training and police protocols. And that is the nature of the lawsuit, because we believe that his actions were, just as you kind of alluded to, excessive. And that's the basis of it. So it's not so much about, you know, people, you know, disobey the law all the time. You can go get on a highway and go past the speeding limit, and that's a ticket. You know, you can't have cruel and unusual punishments and have your life in jeopardy for simply what could be perceived as breaking the law. And I would also like to add that Jacob has not been charged with any crime as it relates to the incident on August 23rd. So I just want to leave that, as that's important to note. But again, we can't have this, as a society, this thought process that, oh, you didn't do what the officer says.
So was he not charged, or were charges
precedent?
Was he not charged, or were charges dropped?
He was not charged for any incident occurring on August 23rd, 2020.
Yeah. Does it matter that he did have, say somebody has a criminal record, say they do have some substance in their system. Should that be a mitigating factor when a jury looks at either the guilt or innocence of the police officer or how much compensation to give somebody who gets shot?
You know, that those are not the facts of this case. You know, Jacob did not have any substance in his system. I have never heard of any allegations thereof. So, you know, that is something that should even be considered.
What about a criminal record or warrants for people's arrest? This happens all the time, right? People say, well, the guy's a bad, talk about your bad actor, and then they point to these things. What do you say about that?
Sure. You know, and I think that's a dialogue that us as a country need to continue to have, because, again, that's a dangerous precedent in having. If someone has, you know, made it wrong in life, they've suffered the consequences, they went before our criminal justice system, you know, that's just that. You know, if they have a warrant that's outstanding, then sure, they should be taken in and have to answer for whatever is against them, of course. But again, that is not justification for taking lethal action or deadly action against an individual just because of a circumstance that they once had. So again, those are conversations that we really need to have as a country to heal from and to hopefully learn and grow from.
I don't want to confuse juries here. Has the jury for this one been selected then?
No. We're not even close to that point. You know, litigation.
You just filed the suit. Yeah, right. I'm thinking of another jury in that case. Okay, so then, do you have a timeline in mind? How does this go? And would you settle? Would you come to some agreement of terms and cut the thing short? How do you expect this will play out?
Well, of course, that will always be, you know, Jacob's decision as to, you know, what his interest is, and our job is just to carry out his interest. Typically in litigation, we can expect this process to be as quick as, you know, a few months or so, or it can definitely go several years. So, you know, it just really depends on how both parties intend to proceed. But litigation is definitely can definitely be a long course.
B. Ivory, some of our listeners say things like this. I'm just looking at our text line. He was shot in the back. Well, he was trying to get into a vehicle, and a vehicle can be a deadly weapon. If the cops don't subdue him as he's entering the car, who knows what sort of mayhem can take place? What do you say about that?
You know, I think that is just a presumption, and I think that there's no facts to conclude that you know, Jacob getting in a vehicle or that just, there's no harm. I mean, first, it was been articulated that the threat of imminent harm was a knife. Okay. So the facts, and if, you know, you look at the complaint, it's in the complaint and it's public, that if you look at each screenshot, Jacob had his left hand on the door handle and his right hand was extended into the vehicle, dropping the knife. The knife had already been dropped before the first shot rang. That's our contention. So again, when you go look at the first shot, now you have to look at...
Oh, pardon me. Let's be clear about that, though. So here's a guy maybe getting into a vehicle. He has a knife. Police are making split-second decisions. They didn't get up that day wanting to shoot this guy. They were put in a position to make a split-second decision based on the safety of them, other people, the people in that car, children. So maybe the cops weren't being as, you know, irresponsible as you would have the jury believe. What's your reaction to that?
Well, like I mentioned, all of these facts will play out in court. I mean, obviously, we disagree with that contention that Jacob ever posed any threat to anyone. He never turned toward the officer. If he was going to pose a danger, I would think that individual doesn't walk away. You know, if you're looking at a seat to pose a danger, you don't have your left hand on a door handle. But again, these are our points of view. So again, we respect everyone's opinion on it, and it's an important issue.
Yeah.
And we're most interested in, you know, getting accountability and learning and growing so that we don't have to deal with another situation like Jacob Blake again.
Well,
I mean, that's really what this is about.
B. Ivory Lamar is an attorney, one of a couple on counsel for Jacob Blake. I appreciate your time today, B. Ivory. Interesting conversation. It's so sad. And let's maybe visit again down the road. I'm glad you were able to join us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.